This is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Society does not change without a push. That's what activists and community organizers do, apply the pressure that they hope leads to positive change. Art can and does and often has played a part in activism and community organizing, and not just visual art, as our next guest reminds us in a recent book. Ken Grossinger is the author of Artworks, How Organizers and Artists Are Creating a Better World Together. Ken Grossinger, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Happy to be here with you, Jeff.
Well, you give a great example right off the bat of art and activism in partnership. How pivotal was the music of the civil rights movement to its stature and success?
It was really pretty essential. I would love, if I could, it's not too unorthodox, to read a quote from somebody from the civil rights movement that comments on that exactly.
Go ahead.
It's from Wyatt T. Walker, who is the director of the faith-based civil rights organization Southern Christian Leadership Conference, otherwise known as SCLC. Here's what he says about the song, "We Shall Overcome." "One cannot describe the vitality and emotion this one song evokes across the Southland. I have heard it sung in great mass meetings with 1,000 voices singing as one. I've heard a half dozen sing it softly behind the bars of the Hinds County Prison in Mississippi. I've heard old women singing it on the way to work in Albany, Georgia, and I've heard students singing it as they were being dragged away to jail. It generates power that is indescribable."
Which it really was. I mean, these were amazing songs and an amazing movement that accomplished a lot. But I can just imagine people listening going, well, that was nice, but it's history. I mean, are there more recent examples that are as striking as that one, would you say?
Yeah, sure. There are so many. And I would say, too, that it's not just the power of the song, but it's actually what the artist brings to the table. And a good example of that is the fight up in Bristol Bay in Alaska over the Pebble Mine, which was the largest open-pit copper and gold mine being planned in the U.S. And there, the fishermen who were organizing the battle against the extractive industries, the mining company, realized after 10 years of the fight that they needed a campaign song. They needed a campaign theme song. And they invited a guy named Cy Khan up from North Carolina to write them a theme song. And what Cy did was went into the community. He went into a third grade class called Rebels to the Pebble, it was called. And he told them that he would be their musical messenger if they could tell him what message. And in any way that you can talk to a third grade kid, that's exactly what he did. And he played his songs in the homes of people in the Bristol Bay area. And he said to those folks, "If you like my song, let me know. If you want me to change it, let me know how. And if you want me to nix it, I will." And so he built trust among musicians and the fishermen throughout Bristol Bay. And so that kind of vitality, it's not just the power of the song or the power of art or the influence of a movement leader, but bringing those things together really mattered in that fight. And the fight continues today.
So it's almost as if it's just as important to get people to recognize the art and maybe even participate in it as is to create it in the first place.
I think that's essential. I also think it's essential that artists sit on the boards of directors of these organizations that are doing the organizing, and that artists also embrace the community organizers as their own. And so we know that organizers don't necessarily think strategically about art and culture, but it is also artists themselves that don't think strategically about their work in the service of social movements. So bringing those things together is very dynamic and very powerful.
Ken Grossinger is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Artworks, How Organizers and Artists Are Creating a Better World Together. Art and activism, as you point out, have long been partners. How do you see the roles of relationships changing in our time? You're just giving examples of ways in which they aren't necessarily thought of, but do the roles need to change? Have they?
They are beginning to change, but slowly. And they're changing because people are realizing that we're not winning on the scale that we need to win on. And so we know that organizers and lobbyists and political operatives, we know that through social movements that policy and legislative reforms are possible. But what happens is when power changes hands, those victories often get rolled back. And I think it's because we don't address the narratives that underlie those conflicts. And so that's giving rise to people like Hank Willis Thomas, a photographer in Brooklyn, saying, you know, change on my timeline is 10, 20, 30, and 40 years, because he's oriented towards changing not just things yesterday, today, and tomorrow, but he's oriented towards changing the way people feel, changing their hearts. Art penetrates popular culture in a way that organizing never will.
So talk about that. I mean, the penetration, I was thinking in terms of transcendence, that art gets to places in people's hearts and minds that just talking to them doesn't necessarily do. I wonder if the task of establishing art in that sense is a little harder in an age of constant information and social media and people flinging words at each other all the time.
Yeah, I don't think so. In fact, I think the opposite. In terms of music, it actually will penetrate the din. It'll penetrate beyond what we're hearing every single day in and day out, because people respond emotionally. And, you know, Shepard Fairey says that you have to be emotionally primed to accept new ideas, and art can do that.
Do activists tend to have artists top of mind when they're gearing up to organize people into movements, you think?
Only artist activists themselves, but not organizers. They don't think we have, you know, I spent most of my life in the organizing community, almost 35 years. And when I was trained to think about my craft, when I practiced it, and when I began to teach younger organizers how to think about their work, art and culture were never a part of the mix. And so this is a new emerging area of work, and it's very exciting for that purpose.
When you mention artist activists, are there lots of them, or are most activists non-artists?
Well, that's a great question. I would guess that there is a separation between organizers themselves and artists, but there are a lot of artists that see themselves as organizers, just as there are a lot of organizers that see themselves as artists.
You point out something of an artistic lag in certain movements, notably the environmental movement, because members tend to come in loaded with science, as Bill McKibben points out. I guess the Pebble Mine would be one example of the use of art in environmental organizing that's shown through.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's talk about the visual art. Even the posters of today have hashtags on them. I mean, so social media and words and photographs and short videos are important. I mean, what does art need to do to make better use, perhaps, of what's available in terms of avenues of approach to people?
So that question really gets at the difference between what we saw in the civil rights movement and in other social movements, because they did not have social media at the time. They did not have hashtags. During the Black Lives Matter movement, we saw an exponential number of people engaging around activism, in large part because of social media. So many rappers and singers, if you look on the YouTubes, you'll find that they had millions and millions of views. And likewise, not just through music, but through visual art, if you take a look at the murals, the George Floyd murals in particular, there were thousands of those murals that were created, and not just in the U.S., in Europe, in Palestine, in Syria, in Australia, throughout the world, and those were amplified through the media, as are the works of J.R. And if we have time, I'll just tell a quick story.
Sure.
During the Trump administration, when Trump was implementing his family separation policies and referring to Mexicans in vile, dehumanizing terms, J.R., a photographer from France, went down to the southern border, U.S.-Mexico border, and he created a 70-foot picture of a one-year-old baby in its crib, but he made it look like he was looking out over the U.S.-Mexico border. And within 24 hours, a million people saw that image on Instagram, and it generated tons of press. People started traveling to the U.S.-Mexico border just to see this image. So social media and internet communications really have been important in engaging larger numbers of people than we've been able to do before.
There's a color plate of that installation in the book, and it is just fascinating to look at the Border Patrol people on one side looking up at this photograph of the baby peering over the wall.
Yeah.
It's something else. We're talking to Ken Grossinger here on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of Artworks, How Organizers and Artists Are Creating a Better World Together. Is there some natural tension between artist and organizer, artists not taking direction on what the art should communicate or something like that?
Yes, all too much. Let me point to two things. One is message control. A lot of community organizations, when they're environmental organizations, anti-poverty organizations, women's organizations, they spend tens of thousands of dollars on poll-tested messaging to learn how to think about how to communicate with the public. And artists worry, and rightfully so, that their creative impulses will be stifled if they engage with these organizations who don't want to risk moving off the message that they've so message tested. That being said, you diminish the value of an artist's contribution when you bring an art into the fold. And so you can't say to them, it's got to be this message in this kind of way. You have to let them do what it is they do. And so therefore, there are risks involved on both the organizing side and the artistic side. And the way that you mitigate those risks, I would say, is through some kind of understanding at the front end between the artists and organizers about what each can expect from the other. And the second point that I would make about some of the tension is what I referenced just a little bit earlier, which is that organizers want things done yesterday. They want things done today and tomorrow. They want change and they want it now. Now, it's not that artists don't have that same amount of urgency, but artists also think about changing the narrative, as I mentioned with Hank Willis Thomas. And for that, a much longer time horizon is out there. And so those are two examples of the kind of thing that needs to be negotiated when these collaborations happen.
But there's an example you give in the book, and oddly enough, it's a place called the Speed Art Museum in Louisville that actually got an exhibit on Breonna Taylor up very quickly after her death.
That was quite an extraordinary feat. Stephen Riley, who is the director of the museum, emptied three or four of his galleries within 3 to 4 months. And the exhibition runway on a museum is generally 3 to 5 years. And the story there is that Ta-Nehisi Coates commissioned Amy Sherald to do a portrait of Breonna Taylor, who is from Louisville, which is where the Speed Museum is. And Amy said she would do it, but only if the portrait could be shown in Louisville. And so they used Amy Sherald's portrait. And for those of your listeners who don't know, Amy Sherald did the portrait of Michelle Obama that's hanging in the National Portrait Gallery. And Stephen created two advisory boards, one national advisory board made up of artists who had family members killed or maimed by the police, and a local community advisory board made up of mental health workers, civil rights advocates, and so forth. And the two of those bodies, and Tamika Palma, who is Breonna Taylor's mother, really informed the content of that work. And they brought in a curator after the fact. So it wasn't a curator trying to decide what it is that he or she should do on behalf of the community, but it was the community that made that decision, and she implemented their wishes. And so the Speed Museum is an extraordinary example of how a museum can become a community-building institution rather than a community action target.
You also point out in the book that the Queens Art Museum and the New York Borough of Queens hired community organizers to do what?
Yeah, that was fascinating. So the Queens Museum is in a neighborhood called Corona, and Corona is 65% Latino. And what they found is that their audience was not from their local community. And so they thought if they wanted to reach into the community, they needed a community organizer. And they're the first museum that I'm aware of that actually put in a line item budget for a community organizer. And now they've had 5 or 6 since that time. So it's an ongoing process whereby community organizers are soliciting input from the community about the types of art that they want to engage with. And so the partnership is truly an authentic partnership, not just sort of quote, community engagement that the museum does in the surrounding area.
Ken, we got about 30 seconds left. What do you think it'll take to get more art and activism together to scale it up?
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question. We're beginning to see it scale up, but not on the pace that it needs to. And we just need more of it. We need more examples. And the book is really filled with a lot of different examples for that reason about what works. It takes a look at these questions through the lens of the civil rights and Black Lives Matter movement, through the environmental and immigrant justice movement. And the more success we have, the more I think this will become a larger part of our playing field.
Ken Grossinger is the author of Art Works, How Organizers and Artists Are Creating a Better World Together. Ken, thanks so much for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Many thanks, Jeff.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We'll be back.